Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hi everyone, I'm Cindy, the host of True Crime California, a weekly podcast about murders and other true crime that takes place in the great Golden State. Join me every week as I talk about a new case, some very well known and others not so well known, but always coming straight out of California. True Crime California is a proud member of the Darkcast Network.
This is Tracy.
This is Samantha.
This is The Suspended Sentence.
Grab your latte and join us as we enter season two, starting January 1st of 2024.
A year packed full of serial killers that you may or may not have ever heard of.
Thanks for being there.
Stay safe.
Today, we bask in the light of mustachioed greatness. Hi, this is Daniel Segura, host of the Mustachioed Podcastio. You like mustaches? You like movies? You like sexy chinganos? Well, the Podcastio is the place for you. We are talking legendary mustaches from Charles Bronson to the great Burt Reynolds to the OG Ice-T. Find the Mustachioed Podcastio anywhere you listen to podcasts. That is Mustachioed Podcastio.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Yes, thank you.
What story do you have for us this week, Mom?
Today, I am going to be talking about a murder that was... Oh my gosh, like the cold heart, like, doesn't even begin to express, like, the grossness of this murder. I mean, all murders are bad, don't get me wrong. But this one, like, when I get into the details, you can go look up the body cam footage from the officers who responded. And, like, they're interviewing, and the interview is just crazy when you hear it. It doesn't even seem real. Anyway, no spoilers. What are you going to be telling us about? What story have you got?
I've got the story of Mark and John, and legally that's the only names we have for them.
Oh, okay.
And to go with it, I have the cocktail, the jackknife, which sounds gross.
Yes.
So it's one part Jack Daniels and one part Bailey's. It's however much you want. Right. I decided to make mine a shot because I think the least amount I could have of this, the better. So
I thought about that too, but I wanted to taste it. And I didn't think, when you do a shot, I mean, you get a little bit of the flavor, but I wanted to see if I would hate it as much as I think I will. So I didn't make a big one, but I went a little bit bigger than a shot.
Okay. So the instructions are simple. Fill a cocktail shaker with ice, pour the ingredients in, shake until chilled, and strain into a glass. Let's give it a try.
Okay. I put ice in my glass because I wanted it to really stay cold.
Okay.
So we'll see.
I mean,
pretty gross.
It's not as bad as just like a straight shot, but it's not. I'm glad I didn't make a full drink out of it.
Right. Yes. It's not great. But I don't hate it as much as I thought I would. I think the Bailey's cuts it a little bit enough to make it semi-tolerable.
With a little bit of sweetness in there and like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's get into this story. And it's both brutal and bizarre, but okay. I decided to call this one a...
Bizarre?
A bizarre because no one dies in it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's always
good.
But
it is brutal, and we'll get right into that.
Okay.
Okay. On June 29th, 2003, Manchester police received a call from a young man who claimed a man in a black hoodie had robbed and attacked him and his friend. When police arrived at the scene, they were greeted by 16-year-old Mark, who claimed that he and his friend John had been walking through an alley in the Tafford Centre in Manchester, UK. He told police that the man robbed the two and proceeded to stab his 14-year-old friend John twice.
I think I know this story. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think I know this story.
It's super weird.
Yeah.
John had been stabbed once in the chest and once in the stomach, cutting his liver and piercing his kidney.
Oh my God.
He was rushed to the hospital and an investigation was launched. What police found would turn out to be the first crime of this nature ever committed in the UK. Mark's parents bought him a computer in 2002 to help him with his schoolwork, and Mark started checking out chat rooms fairly regularly. John and Mark had met in a chat room dedicated to Manchester teens 6 months before the stabbing took place. However, before Mark was introduced to John, he met Rachel in the chat room, who posted her basic information in the chat, and Mark saw this as an opportunity to find a girlfriend, so he decided to direct message her. The two formed a quick connection, and their conversations appeared somewhat normal, talking about normal teenage stuff like sports, media, and sexual activity.
Of course.
Mark quickly fell in love with Rachel and would try and get her to meet up with him, but their plans would always fall through due to Rachel. Rachel decided to introduce Mark to her stepbrother John, who was 14. The boys became instant best friends and would often video chat and play video games together. Eventually, Mark gained the courage. Okay.
Question.
Yes.
So, Rachel says, here, hang out with my stepbrother, John.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can video chat. But Rachel doesn't video chat with him, right?
We'll get into that.
Just John and Mark. Okay.
So eventually Mark gained the courage to tell... Eventually Mark gained the courage to tell Rachel that he loved her, and to his surprise, she said it back to him.
Oh, God.
After that, the two would often sext, and Mark would use his video cam to pleasure himself, but Rachel wouldn't ever turn hers on, claiming she had bad experiences in the past.
Okay.
Yes. The two would constantly message, email, and one side video chat whenever they had the free time. One day, a new person popped into the chat named Kevin McGregor. Kevin promoted himself in a strange way, claiming he was a stalker, which is just a weird thing to tell people.
Yeah, that is something you do on the down low. You don't like, hey, guess what, everybody? I'm a creeper.
Creep chat. Yeah.
Hey, everybody, I stalk people, and I'm proud of it. Ugh.
So no one believed him until he emailed Mark claiming that he had kidnapped Rachel.
Oh, God.
Mark immediately messaged Rachel and could not get through to her, which was unusual since they constantly talked. Like, whenever they had the free time, they were talking. Kevin messaged Mark his demands to release Rachel, and his demands were for Mark to get on camera, show his feet, and masturbate on camera for Kevin.
show his feet. It's the first feet finder.
I guess. In a fucked up way.
Okay. Oh, this Kevin guy, man, he's a weirdo.
I don't know why you wouldn't call the police if you really believed that your
girlfriend,
online girlfriend, had been kidnapped.
Well, yeah. Again, teenagers do stupid shit. That's why they're teenagers.
So Mark complied with Kevin's demands. And after this happened, Rachel was released and she finally responded to Mark.
Oh my God. Thank God.
Yeah. The two agreed to meet up, but when Mark got to their meeting location, Rachel was nowhere to be found.
Oh, did she get kidnapped again?
He waited there for hours before eventually heading home. And when he finally got home, he went to message Rachel, but found another message from Kevin.
Oh my God, Kevin.
Claiming Kevin had sexually assaulted Rachel and killed her.
Oh, now she's dead.
Yes, now you call the police.
God, wow.
This made Mark very upset, and he began spiraling. However, since Rachel was John's stepsister, this event brought the two together, and they became even closer friends.
Oh.
Mark was later contacted by a woman named Janet Dobson, who claimed to be a spy for the MI6.
That's right.
Yes.
I love this.
She claimed that she joined the chat room to recruit Mark into MI6 and made some very impressive claims. She told Mark he would get to meet the Queen, he would get a gun, which is illegal in the UK,
right,
and get £500,000. But he had to complete some tests before he could become a spy.
Well, of course you do. You can't just get hired to be a spy.
Straight. Yeah.
Not like digging a ditch, for fuck's sake.
One of the tests was that Mark had to get John out of school because John's life was in danger.
Oh.
Janet claimed that John was one of the most important people in the UK because he was the only person in the world who knew the combination to a safe located at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean.
But Mark, he doesn't know that he knows it?
What?
She knows. She knows that he knows it, but he doesn't know that he knows it?
They didn't explain that part.
Oh, okay, okay.
She told Mark not to let John know at all, like not to say that he was a spy and right, that he needed to protect him. So
no, because that's secret.
Yeah, secret.
You don't
stuff.
Tell people you're a spy.
Yeah. So Mark called the school and pretended that John had a dentist appointment. So John was released from school. The school contacted John's mother, and she was made aware of John's absence. She immediately went to John's computer to try and figure out where he was and ultimately found the chat logs between Mark and John. She went over to Mark's house and scolded John as well as had a discussion with Mark's parents. Since the two were such good friends, John's mother invited Mark over to spend the night later that week. However, later that night, Mark received a message from Janet, who claimed his test was successful and gave him a final test before his first mission.
Okay.
As part of his secret spy identity, they wanted Mark to appear gay. So she said his final test was to give John a blowjob during their sleepover.
No. No.
Mark initially disagreed, but she reminded him of the rewards he would be granted as a spy for MI6.
Oh,
and Mark complied.
Oh, wow.
Several days later, Janet asked him if he would kill someone close to him. Mark was hesitant, but claimed he would do what was necessary. Janet told Mark that John had a brain tumor and was dying, and to avoid an agonizing death, Mark would need to kill him.
Hmm.
She gave Mark a secret spy number, 47695.
That's a lot.
And claimed that if...
That's way more than 007. Just saying.
Yeah. She claimed that if he went through with this mission, he would be granted the money, a contract to become an MI6 spy, he would meet the queen and be given 800 million pounds.
800 million?
Yes, and he would also get to have sex with Janet.
Okay.
So Mark was very hesitant about killing his best friend. But only minutes after he received the mission from Janet, he received a message from John claiming he was diagnosed with a brain tumor and was dying.
Okay, so he's this getting some confirmation. Clarified it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark was unsure about how to go about this, so Janet gave him specific instructions and told him to stab John and wait until he died to call an ambulance, and was given an abort code of 6969. So if he heard that code at all during the day, he was to abort the mission.
Of course that was the code.
Yeah, of course it was.
Teenage boys.
Mark invited John to the Trafford Center to go shopping. And while shopping, the two boys walked down an alleyway. Mark pulled out the knife and stabbed John in the chest. John crumpled, but Mark pulled him up and stabbed him in the stomach.
Oh my God.
Mark sat there for about 20 minutes before calling the police. Police arrived and Mark told them a man in a dark coat robbed and stabbed John. John was taken to the hospital and later stabilized. When police pulled the CCTV footage of the entrance of the alleyway, they found that only the two boys were seen walking into the alley. Mark was arrested shortly after this, and his and John's computers were searched, and it was discovered that John had masterminded the entire attack. John was Rachel, Kevin, and Janet.
Of course he was.
As well as about, I think it was 140 other profiles he had created.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And this is what year? You said like 2003 or something?
2003.
Yeah. Holy cow.
And the judge, she said that like the writing was so impressive that it made like professional fiction writers like look bad. Like it was, I guess this kid was really good at writing. Like,
okay. But I mean, he said some shit that would, maybe it's because this is 2025 now and catfishing has been around for a long, long time that true. Makes you go, that seems very illogical to be
very real. Fishy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Mark was charged with attempted murder and John was charged with incitement of murder for his own murder, which is the first time this crime has ever been committed in UK history.
Wow. Did and they have to write a new law for it?
I don't think so. I didn't see anything about that, but super strange.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Just the whole, it's hard not to laugh at it because it is like kids, but.
Right.
It's very outlandish.
Because you said, okay, so Mark was 16.
Yeah, John was 14.
John was 14.
Yeah.
I just don't, I mean, I don't know, I don't understand how somebody doesn't go, there's way too many, like, bizarre, it just sounds so, like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, sounds made up.
Yeah, like, 100%.
Well, I guess it was made up.
Right, but okay, if somebody wrote this out as a fictional story and you read it, you'd be like, no fucking way, that would never happen.
Yeah, yeah.
People would see through that in a heartbeat.
I don't know.
It just is so, it's really sad. It's really sad. It is. Did Mark get convicted? Or yes. Were they just, oh, he did?
Both of them got convicted, and part of their sentencing is they weren't allowed to use the internet without adult supervision anymore. Like,
until when?
Until they're not adults, I guess. I don't know. Okay, let's see. So Mark got 3-year supervision order.
They didn't have to go to jail, right?
I don't believe so. I think it was just like a probation type deal, but.
Okay. John
got the 3-year supervision order, and Mark got a 2-year supervision order and banned from any contact with John.
Good. Oh my God. Can you imagine being that Mark grows up and is an adult, and it's a good thing that his identity has been kept secret, and I hope that it doesn't get out, because you could never live that down. That's the good thing that it happened in the UK, because if it happened in the US, everybody would fucking know who this kid was.
Yeah. Which I feel 100%. Like that's a good law to have, unless they commit like a Graham Young type deal. But like,
yeah. I don't think this kid had, it's not like he plotted the whole thing. Mark didn't plot this.
Mark just followed instructions.
Yeah.
He thought he was following the Queen's orders to kill John.
But he also probably did it, you know, because it was he probably thought, this is the kind thing to do for my friend. I don't want my friend to suffer with a brain tumor. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, take him out so he can, you know, I mean, don't stab people just because you think they have. It's not. I'm not saying that.
20 minutes in an alleyway.
Well, I could see the justification in his mind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
if totally. I have a brain tumor, please put me out of my misery. If I have some kind of, you know, health issue that's going to take me out and there's no coming back from it, dump me in a cold lake and let me drown.
That's
strap a couple of cement boots on my, you know.
I can think of a lot better ways to go out.
For sure. I'm just saying, please. You know,
yeah.
Don't make me suffer. Exactly. Don't make me suffer.
Old Yeller style or something.
Something. I don't know, but.
You want to pet the rabbits, Lenny?
Yeah. Right. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah.
That story, every time I hear that story, I'm just so
amazed.
It's
so weird.
It is. It is weird. I'm glad you picked it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Definitely a weird one.
Absolutely.
What's your story about?
Okay. So funny, ironically, not funny, haha, but my story is also about a teen killer.
Okay, those are always interesting.
But nobody incited him to do anything. He did this of his own free will, and it was gross. Super gross.
Okay.
And why this wasn't well publicized, I had never heard of this case before, and I don't know why, because it really should be everywhere.
Okay.
So and it's fairly new. In 2021, ooh. Brian Cohey Jr. Yes, real new. It's resolved too. I didn't give you an unsolved thing. In 2021, Brian Cohey Jr. was 19 years old. He was living with his parents, Mom Terry and Dad Brian Sr. in Grand Junction, Colorado. For clarification, because there's a junior senior here, during the rest of this story, I'm going to refer to Brian Jr. the 19-year-old as Kohi.
Okay.
For years before this incident, Kohi had been under the care of doctors and diagnosed with a few things like depression, ADHD, and low-level autism. He seemed to have some interest in killers, like he was fascinated. This is a bad sign when your kid is fascinated with serial killers and bad people. I mean, granted, we have a podcast that talks about killers and stuff, but I think there's a difference.
We make fun of them and right. shame them.
Right. Exactly. We're not like idolizing them. He really liked Hitler, Stalin, Ted Bundy, and the Columbine shooters, just to name a few. Like,
it seems to be a lot of our stories that involve that.
Right.
Idolization of those guys.
Of bad people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So dating tip number one, if a guy that you are trying to date seems to be really idolizing bad people, maybe stop dating them. I don't know.
Yeah.
At different times, Kohi demonstrated some troubling behaviors like bullying other children and impulse control problems, but he wasn't under any specific mental health care. In the early morning hours on February 28th, Kohi's parents were in contact with the police because their son was having car trouble. The vehicle was partially submerged in the river. Kohi's mom explained to officers that her son was an inexperienced driver who had parked his vehicle on the boat dock but couldn't get the vehicle back up due to the angle of incline. It's important to note that this boat dock was essentially just dirt. It wasn't concrete like many boat docks are. So, I mean, you've been to lakes and stuff like Lake of the Woods and a bunch of other lakes where there's an actual dock and it's concrete and boats,
like
car,
a ramp,
you know,
yeah.
Right. Trucks back mm-hmm. the boat down and then deposit the boat and then drive away. This was essentially just a dirt decline down into the river. It wasn't, I mean, I wouldn't have even thought that
That's
was a boat
sketchy.
Dock, but they're calling
like
it
a
boat
dock.
Seemed
like a good
way
to get dock. Your boat trailer stuck in the water.
100%. Yeah. And in this case, your car, because, you know, he doesn't have a boat. The parents had called a tow truck already and were waiting to see if the car could be retrieved. Kohi explained to police that he had driven to the ramp, no specific reason in mind. He just needed to get out of the house for a while. So he went to the riverbank and the boat dock to just sit in his car and think.
Smoke weed, probably. That's
maybe
usually what happens.
It's the middle of the night. It's 2 o'clock in the morning when this happens, when they're talking to the police officers. Basically, he had parked his vehicle on the ramp. He had backed down the ramp, so the trunk end of the vehicle is towards the water. He didn't think it would get stuck, though.
Did it say what kind of car it was?
It was like a sedan, like a Nissan Altima or Corolla or something. Nothing. I think
probably not four-wheel drive capable of getting
out of the mud. No, I think it was an Altima, but I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But it was, you know, like a little probably front-wheel drive sedan.
Okay.
After he sat for a while, he tried to pull forward, but the car slid backwards into the river and became stuck. He had to get out of the vehicle because the whole vehicle is in the water, but it's like midway up the doors. So he had to get out in the water, crawl to shore, and then call his mom and dad and say, hey, I fucking got my car stuck in the river.
Front doing that.
Could you imagine?
Dad might have killed me.
I'm really glad that that never happened to you because I don't know. I would have been like, what the? You did what? You got your car where? And there's camera footage. There's body camera footage of this incident. And the mom's just like, you know, he's an inexperienced driver and he's just a dumb kid, basically. I mean, she didn't call him a dumb kid, but She's like, you know, never been in this circumstances before. And, you know. So he crawled out of the vehicle, called his parents. They came down. After explaining the situation to the police, Kohee's parents took him home because he was cold and wet from having had to climb out of his car in the river. So they took him home and they went back to the boat dock without him. A few hours later, as the vehicle was being pulled out of the water by the tow truck, the officer noticed a red substance on the back bumper of the car, and it was dripping like out of the trunk area, and there was some like a red substance on the back bumper. He points it out to the parents, asking them if there's a possibility that their son had been injured in the incident. Both of them claim to not know about any injuries. They say he didn't say he was injured or anything. So they
wouldn't
call
the parents. I'd just pop the fucking trunk right away. I'd be like, what the fuck is in there?
Yeah, I guess they didn't do that. But they call him. He's at home. And explain about the police's concern about there being blood on the back of the car. On the officer's body cam footage, Kohee can be heard saying that he doesn't have any injuries and he seemed confused about the presence of any blood on the vehicle. He doesn't know why it's there. He's not hurt. He's like, that's weird. I don't know why it would be there. I don't know what it is. They basically don't do anything more. Nothing further is pursued regarding the mysterious red substance, and the vehicle was released back to the parents. The following day, March 1st, police received a missing persons report from a local bridal shop. The missing person was a homeless man, 69-year-old Warren Barnes, who was often known to the local businesses because he would go to the different businesses. They knew him. A lot of the businesses knew him, liked him. He would read books a lot of times, sit out in front, and some of the businesses would bring him food and drinks and things like that, you know. So they knew who he was, and they all seemed to like him. Warren sometimes worked for a local TEM agency doing various jobs, and he was supposed to work at one on March 1st. When he didn't arrive for his job, the TEM agency contacted the bridal shop, knowing that he had a friendship with the owner, but she hadn't seen him either since a couple of days before. She was the one that called in the missing persons report. In the meantime, Brian Sr. was cleaning out his son's vehicle, the one that had been in the river. He found a wallet in the vehicle that contained Warren's ID and a business card for the temp agency. He also found a clean knife in the glove box. Brian Sr. asked his son about the wallet, but Kohee claimed he had just found the wallet and put it in the car, but denied ever knowing Warren. He was like, I don't know who this guy was. I just found the wallet when I was down at the boat dock and I put it in the car. While Kohee was at a friend's house, his mom went up to his room to tidy up. She found a plastic bin, like a Rubbermaid bin, in his closet, and inside were two plastic bags, like plastic trash bags that had been double bagged in his closet in that bin. She picked up one of the bags, noticing the weight of it and that it was full of my least favorite word in the entire world, maggots.
Ooh, she couldn't smell it first?
Guess not.
If there's maggots, there's smell, usually.
You'd think. I don't know. Yeah. No. Seeing the bugs, we're just going to call them bugs, in the bag, she was like, oh, I should put this somewhere I contain it. So she took it to the kitchen and put it in the sink. She opened it a little further.
Outside. Take it outside.
Yeah, she didn't take it outside. She put it in the sink. And when she opened it further, she saw there was a fair amount of blood and what appeared to be an ear.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
How long was this after the
two dude days? Was missing?
Oh.
Yeah, so the fact that there were the M-word bugs that fast is... I did not think that they would show up that fast, but apparently they did. When Kohi returned home, his mom called 911 to report that she thought she found a human head in her son's room. She also explained that there was another bag, but hadn't opened it yet. So she wasn't sure what was in the other bag. During the 911 call, she further stated that Kohi seemed to have a morbid fascination, but she thought that he was channeling it towards becoming a crime investigator. And officers responded to the call and spoke with Kohi outside. When officers asked him about what his parents might have found in his room that would be concerning, he paused for a second, changed the tone in his voice. Like, the tone in his voice initially was like, "Hi, I'm kind of friendly." When they asked, "Hey, your parents called and said they might have found something concerning in your room," he stopped for a second. And then the tone of his voice dropped a little bit and clearly and calmly admitted to having a human head and hands in his room. The officer's body cam footage of this interaction is so creepy and gross, and really, like, when you hear it, it makes your skin crawl, and it's like, you just, it's chilling, because he goes, "Yeah, a human head and hands." It's so gross. It's so gross. Kohi was taken to the police station and questioned further. During the investigation, he admitted to everything. He claimed that on the night of the murder, he had been driving around and saw a large tarp near the boat ramp. Assuming it was a homeless person, he retrieved his kill kit, which he called a kill kit in the interrogation. He received the kill kit from the car, which contained gloves and a knife. He put on several layers of rubber gloves and grabbed his knife. He pulled back the tarp and proceeded to repeatedly stab the victim, which was Warren Barnes. He dismembered the body, taking the head and hands with him. Kohi further disfigured the head by cutting a Glasgow smile into the face and gouging out the eyes.
Jesus.
And if you don't know what a Glasgow smile is, we did cover it on a previous episode, so you can go back and listen to that. During the interrogation, Kohi admitted that he had wanted to kill someone for at least the past 6 months. He had a preferred target, which he thought it would be better to kill a homeless person or a sex worker. Those were his ideal targets.
Harder to track down, yeah.
Right. He was charged with first-degree murder, tampering with a deceased body, and tampering with evidence. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Although one psych eval came back denying this claim, saying, "No, he is perfectly sane." The evaluation done by his defense counsel, of course, claimed that he had had a psychotic episode which caused him to become temporarily insane. And that's what led him to, I was temporarily insane. The defense attempted to use his diagnosis of ADHD, autism, and severe depression to explain his actions. However, the jury disagreed with the defense idea of insanity and found him guilty of all charges. In February 2023, at the age of 21, Kohi was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's gnarly. There's one of the sources that I used was a YouTube channel called Explore With Us, the Explore With Us podcast, which if you're looking, there is a link in our show notes. If for some reason it doesn't show up and you want to see it, you can either Google it on YouTube, or if you want the direct link, and send me an email and I'll send it to you. But there's a lot of like the body cam footage and different interviews and stuff, and the interrogation in the police station afterwards. It just is so, like I said, chilling is an understatement, in my opinion. Like, the stuff you see, I saw it on Instagram. That's where I first heard of the case and saw it. And I saw the body cam footage and I was like, that's not real. But it's real. And it's creepy and it's gross and super tragic and sad for everyone involved. I mean, not this kid because he's a monster, but, you know, his family. First of all, his mom is has a good stomach, because you don't go looking around in teenagers' rooms unless you want to find stuff that you don't want to have a discussion about. But yeah, I mean, I can't imagine she ever would have thought that's what she would find.
I doubt it.
She was probably like, oh God, I'm going to look in this closet. It's probably full of porn or something like that. But oh my God, wild.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard of that before.
Yeah. I know, it's a newer case. I mean, it's resolved. It resolved, well, now 2 years ago.
2022, you said?
2023 was when he was sentenced. February of 2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yep. Yucky. Gross.
Yes, very yucky.
Do you have a chaser for us?
I do. So, we all know I like my audio dramas.
Yes.
And I found a new one. Well,
ooh, do tell.
I shouldn't say new. It's actually quite old.
New to
the
you.
The Twilight Zone radio dramas that were on air in the 60s have been remastered and put up on Spotify.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, Twilight Zone obviously has a great reputation for spooky and unnatural things. And basically they took all the CDs of them and put them up on Spotify. So you can just go and listen whenever you want.
You know, I don't think I knew that they were radio dramas.
I didn't know there was radio dramas either, but
yeah,
it makes sense. Like, I mean, the whole War of the Worlds thing that... Like, did you hear about that when the...
What?
I think it was... Let me look this up. So when War of the Worlds, alien...
Yeah.
Movie... Not the movie, but the book. I think they did like a radio drama.
They did do
thing.
The radio drama of it, and it freaked people out because they thought it was real. And people lost their minds.
Apparently some people killed themselves over it.
Yeah.
But like that, yeah, I guess it appeared on a Halloween episode of the radio series, The Mercury Theater on Air.
And, conspiracy theory time.
Okay.
Do you feel like there's a chance that they released that as a radio drama to see what the mass society, how they would react to the idea of a world invasion? And when they realized that people lost their shit, they were like, okay, we really can't tell them the truth about aliens now.
Never thought of it that way. I was always thinking like, it'd be cool. 'Cause like they didn't have phones or internet back then, so like if you were driving in the car and you wanted to listen to something other than talk radio or music, I get the radio drama makes sense, because then it's like the closest you can get to watching TV or something. But
and radio dramas were way. They were the form of entertainment for a long time before that came out. That wasn't the first radio drama. I mean, they thought, people thought that was a real news story that was coming out. They didn't realize they were listening to a radio drama, but it definitely makes me go, well, maybe they did it to like plant the seed to see how people would react. And then when people lost their shit, they were like, no, for real, we cannot tell them the truth now. And so now they're just, they're doubly, they, every time there's a UFO reported, they're like, no, double down. We can't tell them the truth.
I had never thought of it that way. Well, let's see, that came out, that was in 38. So that was before Roswell, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking too.
Yeah.
But I mean, Roswell wasn't the very first. It was definitely one of the early ones, but there were UFO sightings before that.
Yeah. I think that was the first, like, that super was disputed one, though, where people were like...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting way of thinking about it.
Tell us what you think,
came out,
listeners.
The book came out in 1998, or 1898.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So I think they're probably just like, oh, let's turn this into something that people can listen to, and didn't go over too well.
No. I'm gonna stick. I'd be curious if any of our listeners out there also think that it possibly was done as a way to test the waters of the alien stories, and then they went, shit, don't tell them the truth now. I don't know.
I think we need to know now. Everyone's sold out.
Oh, absolutely.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, people are appear to be a little bit more open to the idea of it, but I think some people still would freak out. I don't know. Also think like the circumstances. You know, if an alien drops in your backyard and you see them, that's one thing. If an alien drops and starts shooting at you and trying to burn your house down, that's different.
Yeah, hopefully
you're gonna get a different
somewhere
response.
Somewhere near a jet that can shoot a hellfire at it or something.
Yeah.
Alrighty, what's your chaser, Mom?
Well, my chaser goes back to a previous episode too, episode 33, where we covered D.B. Cooper, who was the mysterious man who hijacked a plane and then jumped out of it and disappeared. There might be an answer forthcoming on it. There's a family, I believe, in North Carolina that believe they may have been related. Like, it's these siblings, and they think their dad was D.B. Cooper. And so they're trying to test some DNA and go back to, like, some previous stuff to see if maybe he was, in fact, D.B. Cooper. He was arrested not long after that for a similar hijacking thing. And so it's the family fully believes he was D.B. Cooper. And they kept their mouths shut because their mom might have somehow been involved, and they didn't want to bring her into it. And so when she died, they were like, okay, now we're going to say that our dad was D.B. Cooper. So I don't know if they're going to be able to prove it, though, because supposedly the DNA evidence was lost from the stuff that they found in his seat. Like, he had a tie clip and there were the cigarette butts, and supposedly that evidence went missing, but I don't know if they're going to be able to prove it or not. But there's a few articles out there. If people are curious, you can go look it up and find out if it's true or not. Who knows? I don't know if we'll ever know, but
I don't think we'll ever know.
Probably not.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of another good episode. Thanks for joining us once again, everybody.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And share us with your friends if they like weird stories, and if they like to get, you know, try out new bizarre random cocktails, or if they don't like to drink, they can still listen to us. You don't have to drink.
Yeah, if they like to get drunk on a Wednesday night. You just have to listen to us
drink. Right.
Alrighty. Love you, Mom.
Love you too, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.